I put in everything to that event. We had 10 months of preparation. I was
Wow.
walking on the edge for 10 months to move those tickets, to do
Yeah.
all the things, to create this momentum. And then you have these 100 women in the room with you. You see the smiles, you see the transformation, you have these relationships because 100 women is a lot. And at the same
Yes.
time, you get to talk to nearly everyone. Then all of this kind of quote unquote crashes, and you're like, oh, and now they are leaving. This hurt a lot. And at the same time, I grew from it so much.
My guest today is my beautiful German colleague, Ramona Ochsenbauer. And I'm so glad to have her on a podcast because she's one of the women I love to watch and follow and study. And I've been in her world for a couple of years now. And Ramona is a creative director and producer. But the thing about her is, a couple of months ago, she was actually a business mentor for coaches, trainers, personal brands. So she decided to double down on her genius, what that is, she will tell you in the interview. And also, at the same time, she made a huge decision. She pivoted in language. So she switched her business from German to English. And I love this interview because we talk about so many interesting things. We talk about content, why regular Canva-generated boring carousel content is not gonna do the trick anymore. We talk about why episodic content and more cinema-style content is something that's really gonna help you, you know, be seen and discovered in a marketplace. Not only that, it's gonna help you be remembered, which is something we all want, right? And we talk about pivoting, we talk about transitioning, we talk about evolving, we talk about how hard it can be to reinvent yourself and really decide to double down on something, although you have a perfectly well-running business in the background, which was the case before she decided to do all these big changes. So without further ado, let's dive in. Enjoy this very open and diverse and insightful interview with Ramona Ochsenbauer and me. Welcome to the Female Purpose Podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation.
You know what I did before I invited you this morning, actually? I went to my Instagram and I checked because I wanted to know, like, when was the first time I actually entered Ramona's world? And I remember it so vividly. I was lying in my sun chair in Mallorca next to the pool and I was so frustrated. Like, I was really mad because I was preparing for a launch I didn't want to be doing. So at that point in time, I had hired a very well-known business mentor and she looked at my business and she said, well, everything is just fine. So let's just, you know, do the same thing that worked before and just make it bigger. And because I felt like I was going through an identity shift, I didn't know that back then, but now I do. I felt massive resistance to do that. But then I said yes, because I didn't know what to do otherwise, right? So I was lying next to the pool and what I did was I went on Instagram and on podcast just searching for, you know, input on what was going on. And I came across yours and I pressed the follow button. And then the first thing I consumed was an audio training called what was it called?
Volume up, maybe?
Volume up. That was the one. That was
love
the
it.
One. And I remember it. I was lying next to the pool. It was 22 minutes and I consumed it. And I was like, how is she in my head right now? This is so good. So I heard it like once again and once again and once again. I listened to it several times. And then I was like, oh, I need more of this Ramona person. So probably when you go to your CRM tool or email list, you're going to see my name on a lot of your programs because I've been binging a lot. And I think even the low ticket offers are so good. Like, I've really taken them and implemented like whole courses with them. That's how good they are. So I just want to acknowledge you for that. Like, it's brilliant.
Thank you so much.
And so that was how I entered your world. And What I find fascinating about you, you have like a similar background to me. You're a marketing girl. You come from a corporate marketing environment. So I'm so curious, like, how did you know that that was not going to be your path? Like, when did you realize, that's not quite it. I'm going to do something different with my life.
Oh, this is such an interesting question because when I decided what I wanted to do after school, I remember that moment so well because I decided I wanted to go into marketing. I knew that all the time that this is my thing to do. And so I did study economics and with a big focus on marketing and strategy. And then I went into the corporate world and that was all the time I felt like in a cage kind of. I think this is like the story many entrepreneurs know. It's like, it doesn't feel right. So also like the sentence I heard a lot in my corporate jobs was like, we've always did it that way. Everything inside, we were like, oh, but now we can do it better. We can optimize. We can do it in a more fun way. And in hindsight, I'm so thankful for my last corporate job because it was so bad. There were so many things happening where it was like, I can't do this. And it needed to be so bad because therefore, I could make that decision to not be in a position where I have to ask someone whether I can go on vacation, how long I can go on vacation, where it's not like running towards closed doors all the time with every single idea. No, this is not what we're doing. And also having so many people you have to have on board to execute something tiny. So you have so many decision makers in between. It was just not my thing. And therefore, I had this last year in my corporate job, and it was the worst year of my life so far, and I hope it will forever be. And I had then made the decision, I don't want to live my life like this. Also, having a look at my colleagues who were in that company many years, like 10, 20, 30 years, and every day looked like the same. And I didn't want to like every day look like the same.
And so, what was the next step? Like, how did you get to do what you do today?
It's such an interesting question to ask right now because I'm pivoting, or I've pivoted in my business in the last, I would say, 6 to 10 months a lot, like a switch in the language. I built my entire business. I scaled it to 2 million in USD received in German, and then I made the switch to English. And the first thing I did back then, in like this worst year of my life, I was studying nutrition by the side because I needed to have something that is so entirely different from what I did in a day-to-day life that I needed to have something to grab, kind of. I wanted to have something where my mind can go into other places and also where it opens up space in terms of, okay, this is also something I could do something with. And when I had made the decision, I wanted to do my own thing. I had to make the decision of, okay, will it be marketing or will it be nutrition? And therefore, in the first 2 years of my business, 1.5, 2-ish years, I combined both. So I supported nutritionists in building their business, in marketing themselves, selling their offers. So I combined both things I were good at. And then I went deep down into business mentoring, business coaching. I built a lot of courses. You already were talking about them. I ran a lot of life challenges. I even hosted a 100-person life event in Berlin in 2025. And I built this entire business based on business mentoring, coaching, build your online business, make money on the internet, become the first millionaire of your family, which I still love. It was all about aiming high. I built this entire business mentoring business for women who aim high, who heard a lot of people say in their life, don't be so fast, wait for the others, you can't have it all. Yes, we can have it all. But then came this point in my business where I had scaled this business to 2 millions, where I realized I love it, I really do, but there's something I love even more. It's creating campaigns. It's creative direction. It's producing. It's being on set with people. Because my brain, since years, since like forever, it works in movies. It works in series. It works in storylines. The moment I have an idea, I see this entire visual world in front of my inner eye. And so I pivoted my business not only from German to English, But at the same time, also a slightly shift from mainly business mentoring to now creative direction production, which is not the same at all, but it's like kind of the same because I'm still the same person. So it's still like the view on the businesses of my clients, like this whole world unfolds the moment I see it. It's all about how people experience it. And beforehand, I did it mainly through a messaging angle. We were building funnels and we were working on the messaging. And now it's additionally to that, it's more like the creative visual world around how people get to experience it, every single touch point. So it's more global brand building level than coaching business building level, and this is where I'm now.
Oh, that's so exciting. We're gonna dive into that, but just let's go back a couple of steps because you said, like, I had built something that worked perfectly well. And I know that myself because, and I also know how hard it can be to say, okay, well, this works, but I'm gonna abandon that season anyway because I don't feel alive anymore and I've grown out of it. So what would you say, like, what did you have, like, any inner arguments with yourself in that process, or was it easy for you to just say, well, I'm even more passionate about building campaigns, so let's do that now? Or what was like the process of really transitioning from the old successful one to the new direction?
That's interesting because it's like we have this double situation, kind of. It's like the German English thing, and then also coaching to campaign building. Because on the German marketplace, I was and I still am one of the big names. So people knew my name. It was easy. It would have been easy to stay in that marketplace and to just ride the wave, especially because I just had built that 100-person live event, which was to that point the most difficult thing, the most challenging thing, the most amazing thing I've ever did in my business. And therefore, I could have ride that or rode that wave in such a beautiful way. I had the momentum in that moment. And therefore, definitely there were voices in my head in a way of, is it dumb to now change the language, to then also change the direction, to have to rebuild then everything from scratch, because with the change of the direction, this entire offer suite you were already talking about, I had built over years, it didn't work anymore. So I let go of 95% of my offers. At the same time, I let go of the language. And therefore, there definitely were these voices of, what if it is wrong? What if it's a mistake? What also, because my husband and I were traveling. So the moment I made that decision, we were still living in our house in Costa Rica. Now we made the decision to travel. And therefore you have more expenses. This is a lifestyle that this it's not cheap. It's not something where like, okay, I have my fixed expenses and I know everything. It's like you have so many variables which come into it. And therefore there was also like this thing of, okay, I'm responsible for both of our lives right now. Can I make that decision? Actually, is it the right thing to do? But there was such a big urge and such a big drive into the direction of campaign building, creative direction producing. And I asked myself the question again, which I asked myself when I was still in corporate, do I want to do what I do right now in 10 years still? And the question was no. And so it was the hardest decision and the easiest decision at the same time.
That is so interesting because I made a similar move in January, so but like a few months after you, I think you published that in November, like the
It was
language.
November, right?
Yes, exactly. I remember that. So, and I sat down with one of my mentors and she asked me exactly what you just told me. She was like, okay, but if you stay on what worked before, like even if it works, do you want to be doing that in 5 years? Like if we were to sit here, would you want to be telling me that that's what you do? And I was like, no, like I felt so grown out of it. And even the language, it's a funny thing because I think like you and I are not English native speakers, right? So like doing that is like it comes with a lot of, for me at least, insecurities. I was like, ah, but what if they don't like my accent and it's not 100% good? And although I studied in English and I grew up in Sweden, which is it's a whole different ball game with English there because movies don't get dubbed and stuff like that. So I grew up with the language, but I thought like, no, but they're gonna not like it. And so I saw, for example, a drop in my podcast episodes when the transition happened. Well, of course, because I think a lot of people were like, well, if she doesn't speak German anymore, and it's not for me.
Right.
And it wasn't easy to hold that, but now I see that it's going up. So I think, as you said, for me too, it was the hardest and the easiest and most natural decision, like if you really
Yeah.
think about what you want to be doing long term. So I totally feel that. And did you get like any feedback from your existing like clients or community? Like what did they say when you actually announced
I
that?
remember so well that at the live event itself, one of my private clients asked me, Ramona, do you ever think about switching to the English-speaking market? Because she knew that all of my mentors, all the people I'm connected with, are more in the English-speaking space. And I said, completely convinced, I said to her, no, I want to stay on the German-speaking market. And then I went to another live event from someone else in Costa Rica in October 2025. And therefore, I surrounded myself with even more English-speaking people. And there I then made the decision. It was like just a few days. Like I was sitting with it for 2 to 3 days. And then I made that decision. And coming out of the live event with all the momentum in the German-speaking market, all the German people at the event, I first had like the momentum. I first had the support. People were like, ooh, this is cool. This is interesting. I want to watch her. I want to see what's happening because maybe there have been some people who are like in the same thought process. Do I want to do that someday, maybe? And there first was like, there was great support from my English speaking people, but, and also from the German speaking ones. But then over now it's like 7 or 8 months. During this time, more or more and more German people left. So yeah, I also remember that for myself, when I had a mentor in, I think it was back in 2020 or 2021, she also made that transition. And I realized it also for myself because then I wasn't deep into like the English language, and I was lazy. It wasn't that easy for me to follow her as it was when she was speaking German. And therefore I remember that I kind of slid out of her world because it was like it was too it was not lazy enough to listen to her. It was like okay, I'm just going to someone else because there I can just listen in German, and also when I come on a call I can just talk German. There I don't have to get out of my own comfort zone. I can
True.
stay in it. And I think this is also what happened with my community. So over the last 6 to 8 months, I saw like this whole shift from all German to now, I would say inside the community, 80% English, 20% German. So many, many people left. And this is on the one hand, I know this is natural. It's a natural process. I know this happens all the time in entrepreneurship. It's also additionally to the thing that I also made the transition from like more mentoring coaching to campaign building production, but also there it, at the same time, even though I know it's natural, it's like the logical thing to happen, it hurt a
Yes.
lot, especially because coming out of this event you had all these 100 women with you in the room. I put in everything to that event. We just broke even, so I didn't make any money from it. And also we had with the entire team, we had 10 months of preparation. I was
Wow.
walking on the edge for 10 months to move those tickets, to do all the things, to create this momentum. And then you have these 100 women in the room with you. You see the smiles, you see the transformation, you have these relationships because 100 women is a lot. And at the same
Yes.
time, you get to talk to nearly everyone. So you have a relationship to every single one. And I also remember like every single name I put on the wall whenever I moved the ticket. And then all of this kind of quote unquote crashes. And you're like, oh, and now they are leaving. This hurt a lot. And at the same time, I grew from it so much.
Oh, I really feel you. And I think actually, maybe they might not have left forever because that's
Yeah,
something I see a lot. Like,
definitely.
they tend to come back. Like, you've been in
Yeah.
business since I think 2019, right? In
Right,
this.
yeah.
So I entered in 20, like late 2020. So it's like 5, 6 years. And I've seen, like, it's so interesting, even now that I changed my direction because it's also a big pivot, or it's not even a big pivot. I wouldn't call it that. It's more of a reclamation. But I see people rejoining my world now that I used to work with in 21, and they're like, oh, what's she up to? And then they book things, and I'm like, God, I haven't spoken to you in 4 years. And so people, maybe they leave, but they tend to come back when they see that you're evolving because that's something interesting, right? So
Absolutely, yeah.
I think it has so many, many sides, but now you're doing what you do. And please tell me one thing. You had this brilliant event in 25, which was Aiming High Live, and you said you walked on the edge for 10 months, which is a long time. And I listened to one podcast episode where you said you made like a huge, like a quantum leap in revenue after that or during that process. But it wasn't because of the tickets, because you broke even, so it wasn't that, but it was something else. And I want to talk to you about that. So why did walking on the edge for 10 months, why did it, like, I think it was quadrupled your revenue that year or something like that.
Yeah.
So what happened to you as a person that made that happen?
I have a big part of me who, or that is used to people pleasing. Let me say it like that. So there is like this tiny people pleaser lives inside of me. And this people pleaser was definitely taller in the beginning of 2025, because when I was holding all these things, I had to hold all these things, all the investment decisions, and then all the team decisions, running this project, besides all the other things happening inside the business, then also holding this entire like time frame of moving the tickets, because 40 to 50% of the tickets were moved 4 weeks before the event.
Wow, okay.
And you have to hold that this entire year all the time. And then also like with the speakers on stage, then with when you host something like a live event, making the decision to go there is such a huge decision for many, many people. And
Yes.
therefore, you have to take care of child or children, you have to take care of pets. Then there's like, how do I get there? Then for many people, it's maybe out of comfort zone in terms of I'm traveling alone. I've never done this. So there's this high emotion everywhere. And you are like in the center of it. You are the one where people always project onto, where people get to the moment where they feel uncomfortable, because maybe when they don't feel uncomfortable with buying that ticket to that price, but when it comes closer to the event, they suddenly feel like, or remember, oh, I'm afraid of flying, but I booked that flight. Oh my God. Okay, I want to get rid of that ticket because then I don't have to do that. So you have so many things happening and you're in the center of the storm, more or less. It's something, or everything comes together and yours. And therefore, I had to make decisions. I had to set boundaries. I had to be so clear in my communication, like I never needed to before. And therefore, this people pleaser inside couldn't exist anymore. Or it got tiny, tiny, or smaller and smaller and smaller every single day, because so many things that had been out of my imagination to do in 2024 were exactly the things I needed to do in 2025 to quote unquote survive. Survive as Ramona, survive as the business owner, like that the business survives, and also to be able to hold all the things that came, like this entire storm that was running that got against me.
I can imagine that. And I think live events are like the, how do you say that? What is the highest discipline of sports? Like the Iron Man of the coaching industry? I think that's
Yeah,
really
it
doing
fits
a live
well.
event. Yeah,
Yeah.
because and I think, like, for me, like, I love that, and I know you do too. Like, you have no troubles traveling alone, but I actually think that's the point. Like, I love to get uncomfortable. I love to get on
Yeah.
a plane and go somewhere because it just jolts my system a bit. So I know, I met you in Florida last year, for example. And it's like it's an investment to go there, and we combined it with a holiday we wanted to do either way. But still, you get on a flight, you go, you immerse yourself in a different environment. It's uncomfortable, and I think that's the point, you know, of the whole thing. But not everybody sees it like that. So I can imagine you were the ones like holding everything together. So if you look back on it now, would you do something different the next time you do an event like that?
I definitely would cut in expenses. So we now know as a team, we know so much better how to do it. So what we did last year was to hire an agency that was specialized on running events. I wouldn't do that anymore because now the team is so skilled in doing these exact things. And also when it comes to on-site productions with our clients now, like the entire logistical things, we have so much skills inside the company, inside the team, that I wouldn't need that. And also I wouldn't sign contracts so fast. And also I wouldn't do it in Germany anymore, because we had so much trouble with music, like what are we allowed to play? Then proving that we didn't use music. We bought like these license-free music set, but then we still had to prove to them that we just used that. So it was like, I think it was a process of 6 months. The team was involved to get like all these things together. And so I would do it somewhere else, but from like the experience part, I would do it like on the same level.
But the music thing is really a German thing, right? The
It is.
GEMA
It
and all
is
that. Oh God, yeah, I can imagine.
insane.
God.
It's insane. Yeah, we had like this license-free music playlist, and they still wanted to charge us €2,000 because there was one information missing on that set list. But I think it was the name of the interpreters. And because the platform we bought it from didn't have that on their list, and then you don't reach them by phone, it's insane. It's Germany.
It's
Definitely
Germany.
Germany.
Welcome. Welcome to the land of
Yeah.
bureaucracy. Yeah, I can imagine.
Insane.
God. But you did that and you grew and you learned and it was a success ultimately. And I want to talk to you about something you posted a couple of weeks ago. It was your birthday and you said growth creates gaps. That was like a carousel, and that was like the common theme of the carousel. So, and since I'm working on identity shifts, that's my business, I want to ask you, because you've made a lot of transitions. You've made big swings, big moves, moving to Costa Rica, giving up your corporate career, then this huge transition in business. And I remember you told on the podcast, there was a story about how you lost a part of your business. I think it was in the early days, and you had to basically rebuild it from scratch. I know you're like identity shift proof, right? You've done it a lot of times. I would love for you to talk to us about how do you know that you yourself are in the midst of an identity shift? Like, are there clues that you always, you know, have and that really nudge you and tell you, oh, Ramona, I think it's time for a change or an evolution in your business and life?
I think it's always, I don't know. It's an interesting question, because I think that most of the times when I'm in the middle of it, I don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
It's always in hindsight that I really know, okay, this is what was happening. But when I think about it, what happens like all the time, it's like this feeling of being not satisfied in a way of how it works. So that from my nature, I'm someone, I love to work. I really do. It would be like the worst thing that could happen to me when someone would say, okay, you're not allowed to work. I don't know what I would do. It feels like this is not natural to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I feel that working, that thinking about business, that doing things I usually would enjoy, I don't enjoy anymore, then it's time to pivot. And I think this is always kind of the start and the end at the same time of an identity shift. So I would see it something like I change my identity shifts, then I feel it because it doesn't feel like or feel as enjoyable as it used to do. And when I realize that, it's already like the next identity shift upcoming, because when you make that decision or you make that change, you make that swing, like in the real world, not only in your head, but you make those decisions, then like you're surrounding changes again, and then you have to adapt, you have to shift again. And so I think it's always like these, I think it's always like these in-betweens when it doesn't feel like it's right, but it also doesn't feel like it's wrong. I think this is where it's like in the middle of the identity shift.
Let's talk about that, like the messy middle, the in between, because that's what a lot of clients come to me for, because they're like, God, I shouldn't be feeling like this. This feels like a desert. Like, that's a word I use a lot. Like, I'm walking through a desert and I don't know, like, will I eventually get out of this? And I say, yes, you will, but there's a couple of things you need to consider. So what would you say to someone like walking in the desert in the middle, like in the messy middle between two identities? What would be your hack or tip for somebody like that?
I love the picture with the desert because I would say, have water with you. Have water with you. You won't be able to, the distance is always like the same. You are in the middle of the desert and you have to get to the end point. You can't rush that. You can't do anything so it happens faster. So you have to go through it. But have water with you in terms of have your tools, have things that light you up. Remember who you are while doing it, because it's so easy to get lost in this entire process. It's so easy to then also like pivot things in your business all the time because your brain thinks, okay, now we can do something. Okay, now I don't have to sit with it. And allowing yourself to sit with it, allowing yourself that also seasons where it doesn't feel that good, even though the outside might look amazing, that this is normal. And that you during these seasons nurture yourself on other levels, like doing things that light you up. Remember yourself, who you are and why you started in first place, connecting yourself to your vision, where I am going to without then getting in a place where it's like, but why I am not there yet. But enjoy the vision, enjoy what you're building there. And it's such a quote that could stand on every calendar, but it's like, enjoy the journey. It's like, it's not about getting to the end point because the end point in everyone's life is death. So we want to enjoy life. And it's the same with business. Every time you walk towards something, it's not about the goal, it's about the way on which you get there. So I think playing with your picture, having water with you is like, when I have to say it in one sentence, is like the thing I would say.
That's so good. I'm going to remember that one for sure. And I want to switch to talking about launching, because I've been watching you and what you do, like in your campaign style. How can I say, like the campaigns you're doing, like your own content. And there was one content piece that I just loved, and it was the proper launch. I thought it was so good. It made me laugh so hard. And I think it was just brilliant. And for those listening, it's basically Ramona playing a woman who's trapped in all these stiff launch mechanisms. Like, she's sitting on a couch and she's sitting there very properly, not able to move, not able to breathe, and then eventually she changes. So you picked a topic which is launching, which is something a lot of us dread for good reasons. And you played with that, which I love, because I also had times in my business where I said, no, I'm not gonna do that anymore. I'm not gonna do any more webinar launches. I did one in October 24, and it was like it almost brought me to a burnout. Like, that was the last time, and never doing that again. So I've had a love-hate relationship with classic launching, and I'm not doing that anymore. But I want to ask you, so if I were to hire you, or anybody listening were to say, Ramona, I don't want to be doing that. I don't want the five-step launch plan. I don't want like all these icky mechanisms of first getting on a wait list and then doing the launch webinar and then sending pushy sales mails. Like, we all know that now. So what would you be doing with me? Like, how would we be shifting my perception of launching using your vehicle? Like, how could I be launching in a different way that would actually feel more aligned?
I love that question so much. So the first thing we would do is to break out these entire launch mechanisms. So Because when we hear the word launch, so many women have an emotion attached to that because they have like made this experience of it's exhausting, it didn't
Yes.
work, sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. And that or it doesn't, then we have like also the definition of launches that the industry built. So it's not that someone sold that and is like a kind of like it's fault in terms of, oh, there's like this bad person who put us all into this trap. It's like what happened in the last couple of years, because how we think launches inside this industry, or how we did until now, is that we have to do like these certain things. And it's also like the we
Yes.
have to do this, we have to do that. So when we think about launching, when you think about launch campaigns, then it's more or less, we have like this white canvas. We have our brand and we have the offer we want to sell. And when it comes to launch campaigns, I like to go with my clients on a bigger perspective out of the industry. So that's not like, okay, this is how you used to sell it. This is how you sell masterminds. This is how you run conversion events that then ramp up to this, blah, 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 all these things you were already talking about. But what would a global brand do if, for example, Tiffany, Dior, Ferrari, if those brands would sell that offer you are currently selling, how would they do that? And then opens up space. Then we
Yes.
suddenly are on another level or another layer in terms of, oh, then even more things become possible. Or how would you sell it if it wasn't a mastermind, but a Hollywood blockbuster? How would you run that campaign around? And this is what I love to do with my clients, that we take what they have, which are in 99% of the cases are mastermind, a masterpiece offers,
Yes.
which deserve so much more attention and it's such a bigger stage. And then we zoom out. If we wanted to do it as big as possible without thinking about any mechanism, without thinking about in details like emails, webinars,
Oh, yes.
story slides, but if you wanted to look at it on a time frame of like 6 months, how do we ourselves want to experience it? And how do we want our clients to experience it? And from there, we start to build.
I think that's so powerful, especially the first part. Like, how do I want to experience my own marketing? I think we ask ourselves that not often enough. Because, like, yeah, we all get into this industry and you always start with the five-step frameworks and blah 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 because you have to learn somewhere, right? So that's it's nothing wrong about that. But I think you and I have been in business long enough to know that we're actually able to detach from that now because we know the basics, right? Like you don't have to tell me how to run a webinar and you know that too. And I think we've all been there, yeah, doing launches because we were told to do them like that. And I remember your podcast episode on it when you said, this is the way you know it's time for a different kind of marketing. And I really resonated with that one. So I'm getting sidetracked. What I wanted to say is, I think that's beautiful. And I think because you said also in your content, there's a huge shift in the online business, right? Away from the classic, this is a Canva post and this is a nice picture and here are my takeaways and na. And it's more like how do you call it, a brand
Brand
shows.
show.
Yes. Could you please explain to everybody what is exactly a brand show? What is that?
So for now, brand show is a term I came up with. So you will hear from me a lot within the next couple of months, and you will hear from other people as well, because I will make sure that people will talk about it. Because we see episodic content, or like everything that we right now see is prove that episodic content is about to be the next big thing. And I won't say only the next trend. It's going to be what's going to shape the landscape of the entire industry and the online space, like how people consume on the internet through the next 2 or 3 years. So when I say brand show, I mean, or there can many things happen under it, but more or less, you can imagine making content that has Netflix level. which can be in quality, like the quality of the visuals. It can also be in the story. It can also be like in both, but it's something where people get to follow along because we all know like the algorithm. Every single one listening, I'm sure about that, had this thought already of, oh, the algorithm is against me. I hate the algorithm. It doesn't work. And imagine that you wouldn't depend on how the algorithm A works and B changes because it changes all the time. But you would have people that would actively search for your content because they want to know what's coming next. They want to know the next thing. They want to know what you're bringing to the marketplace, but they also want to know what the next episode of your content is about. And when I think, or when I talk about brand shows, what I mean by that, it can be like these shows, actually. Think TV shows, like on, we all knew from growing up, like things like where you can become a millionaire, or things where it's like more like this quizzing thing, or like these game shows. These things will come and already did more into the online space. So people will watch things like quizzes, things like we discuss, like talk shows. They will watch that on the internet, on social media, on Instagram, on TikTok. And then also we can think in series. Imagine you would have something for your mastermind where you have like these, let's say 10 episode social show on your Instagram where people get sold onto the story while already buying into the mastermind. And in episode 10, you would then drop your mastermind and people are like, oh yes, of course I want to have that mastermind because I already watched the 10 or the 9 episodes before that, and it just makes sense to now join that. They are so sold onto the world, onto the storyline, that they are, that buying is like the obvious thing to do. And this is what I see and how people consume a lot with like the consumption behavior changes. They don't want to see like random things all the time. Maybe you know, also know it from yourself. I definitely do. I don't want to be like, I don't want to say the victim of the algorithm, but I don't want to scroll there and then by chance I see this or I see that, even though it's customized, but I want to decide what I spend my time with. And people want to do that even more. And we see that already with brands like Marc Jacobs, for example, doing micro dramas, having celebrities, actors, creating these, I think it was like 10, 15 minutes short films where it's all about the brand, but also not about the brand. We have these great storylines, but the bag is like the sidekick, more or less. You see the bag all the time, and therefore it becomes the main character. And also Meta adding things like episodes that you get the feature that you can get your, you already can do that, that your reels can be connected kind of, but you will be able to do it in real episodes that people see your content and they will see episode 1, 2, 3, and 4, like we do at Netflix. We would go on a series and we see the different seasons and episodes. And all of these for me are huge signs that there's a big change in the content consumption, in the content, how it's supposed to be consumed, in how people will then create it. And therefore, brand shows are the thing that will set you ahead when you are an early adopter there, because they are not easy to access. It's not as easy to access as just do a talking head, even though this needs practice, but you can do it. You can grab your phone and you can talk. You have to think more into it. It's a more sophisticated content style, but the reward, therefore, is much, much higher.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And I think also the shift that I'm seeing is it goes away from this fast content, you know, like all these snippets and here and there. And we're all so full of, you know, there is so much and it's so hectic and it doesn't stick. Like you could be scrolling like and then say even saving. I do that, like guilty as charged. Sometimes I save something and I never revisit it. Because the moment I save it, I'm like, I don't even know what I saved. Because it's just, it's designed to, you know, convert very fast, but it doesn't stick. And for example, I launched a Substack channel last week, and I've got so much feedback from my customers saying, "Oh, wow, it's a piece to read. It's like an 8-minute read, and I enjoyed it so much. I was lying on my couch. I was really engaging with this one content piece of yours, and I really loved it. It's so different than just all these fast reels, carousels, snippets, stories, all of that." So, if I were to ask you, what do you think is the difference between good content and brilliant content?
I would say good content converts. So when we have good content, and this is where the entire industry was focused on in the last couple of years, including me, was we wanted to create content that sells. I don't know how many courses are out there that even have this name, like content that sells. So this was the big focus, and this is what good content does. Brilliant content sells as well, but not in a fast conversion approach, but in a relationship building approach. So that people don't only buy that one thing, because good content, what does good content do in a 2026 economy? You get hooked, then you get the DM, and then you buy like the $27 offer, and then you get into an email list, and maybe eventually you will then buy something else. But when we have a brilliant content piece, what happens there is that people, the moment they see the first content piece, they see it and they want to know more. They don't want to have like this fast satisfaction or satisfying thing in terms of, oh, now something happens and I will buy that and maybe I will have a look at it or maybe not. But people want to know more about a brand. They become actually curious in terms of what is happening there? This is different. This is interesting. Oh, what else does she have? Oh, there's also this content piece. And then they get into like this 5-minute, 10-minute cycle where they're like, oh, I spend time with this brand. And then I buy the low ticket offer, but I'm already sold on the brand. And the low ticket offer just is the thing where I want to get a taste. Is it like my style? Is this what I actually want? But they are already sold onto the brand. This is what a brilliant content piece does.
If I were to, because that's a thought, like a real thought I'm having as you speak, if I were to change my content and make it more episodic, isn't that connected with, like, that's my first thought, I gotta be honest, with a lot of effort, because I'm thinking, oh my God, then I have to look pristine and I need a perfect camera, I need somebody filming me, I need all of these things, I need scripts, I need, and I'm constantly being like, ah, when am I supposed to do that? Like, what do you answer to women having similar thoughts?
So every single one of us, so including me, when I have a look at 2025, we should sum up how much time we spend with content in 2025 alone. So a single carousel post can it can take you up to 2 hours until you have like a great thing, like coming up with the idea, especially coming up with the idea or having those days where you're like, oh, I know I want to post something, but I don't feel in the mood to write today. Or you have all these thoughts. So time, content is always time consuming. It is. It is always. When you compare then having episodic content, where you don't have to think about what you're doing there because you have that series, you have that storyline, you know exactly how it unfolds itself, then also it's something you can potentially batch, so you don't have to think about it all the time. And also the way we work with our in-house creative direction clients, for example, we do this once a quarter or once a month, depending on like the frequency they put things out, where we have 1 or 2 days where we create everything and then they can lean back. You have so much more time. So it's, yeah, it's more, there's more brain that has to run into it. More thoughts, more preciseness, more intentionality, but at the same time, it's so much less time consuming than a, I would say, a traditional content style where you're in your own head all the time, all the time, all the time, and actually execution is like a tiny part of it.
And probably it also works. It has like a bigger afterburning effect, right?
Absolutely. So when you would say, I don't know how it's called in English, But in German, you would say Halbwertszeit. So you have like the time until the thing is dying, more or less. So when you have a regular content piece, it's something that lives for 48 hours if you are lucky. If you have episodic content, especially if you have a social show, for example, if you have something like a documentary, we just did a documentary around a production experience we had with one of our clients in Los Angeles. And this documentary is a 20-minute short film documentary style. So if your brain thinks it's watching Netflix, this is the quality we have in there. And this content piece we can break now down into several or several trailers, which we then can use for social media. We can use it on sales pages. We can use it everywhere. So this documentary will work for me, I would say 18 months, more or less. So having that time or spending that time with that content piece, and then also having the possibility to then extract content pieces from there, posting it on the feed, it's amazing. And then also, if you do something like a social show where you don't have to think about all the time what you're creating, which is one great advantage, but then also you have people actually thinking about it, because it's not like this single content piece that stands on its own, where they see it in between of so many different other things. But when you have like this series, this show, and when you think, for example, about your favorite Netflix show or one you just watched recently where you're like, oh, this was amazing. People think about it after they watched it. It's something where they have like things connected in their daily life. They see something somewhere and they think about that exact storyline about that show. And the same thing happens when you start to do episodic content. They will attach your brand, your story to things in their day-to-day life. So we have, on the one hand, we have this content that dies, more or less. And on the other hand, you have the content that lives rent-free in your clients' heads. And you get to recreate it over and over and over again, not in a way that makes it then boring, but you use the same mechanisms, the same vehicles over and over again, and make them better with every time you post it.
I think that's such a great statement. Content that lives rent-free in your client's head. I love that. And what's the most easy way to work with you right now? Like, is it just hopping on DM, on Instagram, sending you something, or is there another offer you want to highlight, or what's the easiest way?
So on Instagram is definitely the best place. And on Instagram, in my link tree, I have right now a link to application form, which you can run through. But I love to connect with you in the DMs beforehand. So the best way to get in touch with me and also talk options, because we are deeply focused on tailor-made packages. So it's not like this one offer, like this one size fits all thing. So we do tailor-made packages based on your brand and where you're going. So the best way is to come into my DMs and tell me what you're building. Tell me about your brand. Tell me about the big next thing you are about to do. Maybe an app launch, a book launch, a live event, a mastermind you want to relaunch. It doesn't matter what it is. And then we just chat a little bit about it, what I see for it, and what we can do for you.
That sounds brilliant. I'm going to put it in the show notes and I'm going to say thank you for this chat. I know it's going to resonate with a lot of people. I think it's so interesting and I love watching what how you are developing yourself and your business. And so just thank you for being you.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for the
I'm
invitation. I
sure
had
you get a
so
lot of
much fun,
value
and it
out of
was a
this
pleasure.
beautiful interview with Ramona Ochsenbauer. If you want to connect with Ramona, just check the show notes. I've linked everything she said and mentioned in there. And of course, if you love this podcast, please give Ramona a 5-star review. It would really mean a lot. And that's it for now. Hear you in the next one. Talk soon.